every game like Hawkeye Tennis Technology. This is Aces with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbett of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
And good evening, everybody. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbett. It is Aces here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, delighted you are with us. What a summer it is for Canadian tennis players, and it continues. The Rogers Cup is on the way, and we're going to have a fun hour talking about that with you here today. Reach the show anytime. Now, our email is roger@sportsnet590.ca. roger@sportsnet590.ca. I throw that out first because Tom is very particular about his questions. Tom Tebbett needs good questions for him to talk about and sweat about throughout the entire show. So if you've got a question for Tom, drop us an email, roger@sportsnet590.ca. You want to reach the show anytime, Twitter's a good place. Reach me at @TheRog590, @TheRog590. Or reach Tom at Tom Tebbett, Nice and simple. And we'll take your questions and comments for Tom. That's later in the program. Coming up on the show today, Ivan Ljubicic on the program in conversation with our own Tom Tebbett. And Jack Sock, and that's a name maybe a lot of Canadian tennis fans weren't all that familiar with until he started partnering with a certain Canadian and having some success in doubles. So a couple of great guests coming up on the program a little bit later. As always, you've got a chance to win Rogers Cup tickets, courtesy of our great friends at Tennis Canada. And of course, the tickets are for Monday, August the 4th, first night of competition or major night of competition at the event. They're great seats. Answer the trivia question when Tom gives it out later in the program, and you could win those tickets. And if you win the tickets, if you're fortunate enough to be selected in our draw by answering the question correctly, you'll be entered in the draw for the Wilson Racquet at the end of the season. This is our sixth show of the season in Aces, four more to come. We'll be all over the Rogers Cup the rest of the summer, and we look so forward to it because what a great time in Canadian tennis for sure. Mr. Tebbett, I tell you, I have not seen a time in Canadian tennis where there has been as much excitement. We've talked about it ongoing, but let me throw something to you. Especially with Milos, well, Jeannie too. Number six, number seven in the world, the great success of major tournaments. How important is it for them to break through and win a Rogers Cup, even if they happen to do it before major? Because we've been so fixated on these guys winning a major. How great would it be for a Canadian to win a championship? Because it never happens, Tom.
No, I guess the last time it happened with him was Bob Bedard in 1958. And you know every year when the golf comes here and Mike Weir trying to win the Canadian Open.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's a total obsession. And people want to have, I think Pat Fletcher was the last guy just before you turned about 25.
Boy, you know your golf too. Maybe we should make it a golf trivia on today instead of tennis, huh?
Anyway, it would be terrific. Really, I mean, there's no question you'd rather win Wimbledon and one of the Grand Slams, I think, just because that's what always goes down in history. But every single player would like to win their home tournament. And both Eugenie Bouchard in Montreal and Milos, obviously, here in Toronto, it would be fantastic for them if they could win it. And it helps a little bit, or maybe even a little bit more than a little bit, to have that crowd behind you. And plus, you're staying at home. There's just a lot of comfort things. There is more pressure and obviously more tension, but it's not quite like a Grand Slam, although maybe in a small way it is. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun to see how they react to that pressure. We'll see how they ride it and just see how the whole thing works out.
The fact, though, that they have both been so deep at major tournaments, Wimbledon in particular, yes, it's a different level of pressure. And to get back, you know, to use a comparison for Mike Weir, you know, Mike won the Masters. There's no bigger tournament in golf than the Masters. But to a Canadian, the Canadian Open is right there. I have to believe the fact, and Mike almost won it and had deep runs into it. I got to believe that both Jeannie and Milos' success in the other majors will make it easier. And I also got to believe, Tom, an advantage, if I can say that. They're still both relatively young at the start of their careers. You know, hopefully, you know, they stay healthy and everything else. They could have a decade or more of opportunities to win this thing. And then further compounding it, and I don't want to be disrespectful to the Canadian Open golf tournament either. It doesn't mean as much to the rest of the golf world as other tournaments. And I would think as much as, you know, Djokovic would like to win another Rogers Cup, you know what I'm saying? It still means more to the Canadian guys. So for those advantages, I would love to see them win here in Canada.
Well, the other thing is, not to take a bit of a shot at golf, but the Canadian Open golf tournament, unfortunately, has fallen on sad times in terms of player field.
Sure has.
We know that the Rogers Cup, the men's event, gets the automatically, because the top 44, top 45 players are automatically entered. So, barring an injury or Tommy Haas had a surgery, Del Potro is still coming back from a surgery. Won't be here, but everybody else should be here. And the same thing with the women. I think the only absentee right now is Simona Halep, number three in the world. And she has a couple of spare weeks and there's a chance she could take a wild card as well. So it's as good a field. Sometimes actually they're better fields than the Grand Slams because they're only 64-player draws, 56 players after you take the buys out. So you get the top 56 in the world. At a Grand Slam, you got the top 128. So you can get a couple of guys ranked, 103 or a qualifier who's ranked 157. So it's a tougher field. Plus you're playing every day, maybe one day off for the top guys. And so it's a real challenge. The other interesting thing that goes through my mind is that, because of the alternation between Montreal and Toronto, it won't be for two more years that Bouchard gets to play at home or Milos gets to play at home. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a real neat year in terms of them both playing in their hometowns.
Well, and yeah, exactly. And here, I suppose, is the interesting element of it. It's only been a couple of years now that the tournaments have run simultaneously. Have we got our heads around that? Are we all good with that? I mean, it is what it is, and we've discussed it. I'm not going to go back and revisit the whys because it is important. It's done. And the virtualness, is there such a word as that, of it on television is kind of cool. But it does make for a different event than in past years.
No, it's not ideal. I mean, basically, the United States Tennis Association stole our Women's Week because they wanted to have a mixed event in Cincinnati. So they moved their women into that event and the men as well. So we lost that week. And so what are we going to do? So we could put our women's event 4 weeks before the U.S. Open, but that's just a little too far, I think, for drawing a good field probably. So it's not ideal. And I think there is maybe at some point they might change something. Maybe they could put the women 4 weeks ahead and then have the men where they are right now and still have those 2 weeks. I think that those 2 weeks of exposure is really great for the sport in the country when you all sort of compact it into 1 week. I always thought that I was hoping, and there's always a chance at some point this could happen. We could have one Monday final at least, which would stretch it to 8 days for one of the events.
Yeah.
And that way you'd have maybe the drama of a separate final. The sponsors obviously would like to be at both finals, and it's hard to do now when they're both in different cities. So we haven't quite got our heads around it, but you make do with a tricky situation. And plus the fact that, we are spoiled because we should get the best players in the world.
Do you think it hurts Canadian tennis per se and all of what you're trying to do, the fact that it's 1 week of tennis instead of two? You've kind of already answered that, but I thought that. And I also think, although I don't know, you know what, and you would know better than I, you're the tennis guy. Does it hurt the media coverage because there's not that many, you're at the top of it, but there's not that many tennis experts, writers, and candy. You divide it. I'm sure you'd like to go to both tournaments.
Well, I did for years and years until just a few years ago. So,
well, I know, but yeah. You can't be in two places at one time now.
Tom. Well, I think
I know that's
for
very,
the first time in many,
is
many
you
years.
Cloning something you're looking at?
That would be pretty scary if there's a clone of me. But a couple of years ago, for the first time, I didn't go to one of them. I believe 2 years ago, I didn't get to Montreal. And last year, I actually got back here for a day. So, no, definitely. I mean, just hypothesize that Bouchard and say Milos and maybe Pospisil, who knows, get to the semis, even if they get to the finals. And if you had that in successive weeks with, each of them, look at the exposure. I mean, you don't need to have Milos and Eugenie playing in the final on the same day. I mean, it's great attention, but if you had two separate weeks, you'd get, double the bang sort of thing. So it's sort of unfortunate that way. And, hopefully at some point it can get worked out. But, I mean, the tennis calendar just generally is, I've said many times, and
it's too long.
You always admire this word, Roger. It's intractable.
Well, I don't know what it means, Tom. That's why I admire it. It's quite interesting. What does that mean exactly?
It means you can't fix it, right?
Really? Is that intractable? That's Tom Tevin. I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Your questions for Tom are welcome. They're already coming in. We love them. We'll get to the mailbag later in the show, though, because we've got a couple of interviews to get to first. But by all means, email us in. Roger@Sportsnet590.ca. Roger@Sportsnet590.ca. And Tom will answer your questions later in the program. Keep that email handy. You have a chance to win the Rogers Cup tickets a little bit later as well. And of course, we will have Tom's trivia to let you do that later in the program. Now, we talk about Milos and Genie as we should. I mean, they're number six and number seven in the world. But there are other Canadian tennis players, and some of them were in action today. Why don't we kind of do a little tennis update scoreboard there, sir, and see what they're at?
A lot of them were in action today. Actually, Gabrielle Dabrowski won a match at the Swedish Open. She beat Camilla Giorgi, who's a bit of a character, I don't know if you heard the story, John Wertheim of Sports Illustrated, an excellent story, and her father swindled about, $250,000 from American investors, who said, my lovely daughter, who's quite cute, would you give me $35,000, and as soon as we make the money, we'll pay
and
it back.
Pocketed the cash?
Never paid it back.
Wow.
And so I don't know how she got in the States a couple of months ago to play Fed Cup, but I guess maybe nobody has. Anyway, it's a long story, but she's actually quite a talented player, done quite well, so that's a good win for Gabrielle, and she'll play Mona Bartel, who's a bit of an erratic, very talented German player in the next round. We also had Vasek Pospisil won his match in Bogota and will now play Bernard Tomic, which is a tough challenge. And Peter Polanski won his match against a qualifier, will now play Burgos Estrella, which is a much easier match than Vasek will have in the second round. So both of those guys hopefully can get through a little further. And in Granby today, Philip Pelliwoo took it on the chin. He lost. And Braden Schnurr, a young Toronto guy, 19 years old, plays college tennis, I think is at North Carolina. He lost as well. So not so good news in Granby, but good news at the international events, because those are WTA and ATP events where Dabrowski, Pospisil, and Polanski won.
Great to see. So we'll follow it throughout the course of the week for sure. Tennis Canada's website has all the details and latest results, of course. Check it out on a regular basis for sure. So who's the next? You don't want to like spoil it and get greedy here, but who's the next player you think we're going to be talking about of all those other players? Pospisil's already there. Let's give it, because, you know, especially at the Rogers Cup a couple of years ago, the fabulous match with Milos. But who's the next big thing, do you think?
I'm not good at these things. I think I told you last week.
No prognosticating?
No, I went out and watched. I told you, 2011 Australian Open, took a friend of mine, a very good tennis writer. We went out and watched Bouchard play in the Australian Open, and we thought, oh, she has this. She's good. She's not bad. Not bad, but nothing special. So how wrong could I be?
That's really good. Yeah, it's like the scout who said Gretzky was no good, too. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, what do I know? Actually, a lot of people,
did surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, she did.
Correct.
So, yeah. And Milos did, too, in a sense. Milos did very little as a junior. And all of a sudden, it was actually in the fall of 2010, I remember, he had a heck of a time winning a match in the Davis Cup against Australia Burgos, the guy that is playing against Polanski tomorrow. And then just a month later, he started beating guys in Asia at tournaments, and boom, he was there. So
interesting when you look at the parallel between Jeannie and Milos in terms of their success as juniors, because, you know, Jeannie won Wimbledon. Like, that's a very different entry into the sport.
Well, Philip Pelliwoo, we see today, he's struggling. He lost by a one-sided score to Chase Buchanan, who's a guy from the States I don't know too much about. But so, I mean, he's had a few injury problems, too, so that's disappointing. So you just never know what's going to happen. And, you know, and also nowadays, especially on the men's side, players are maturing later, too. So it's early days still for Pelliwoo.
This segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada. I'm Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit here from Tennis Canada, and we are taking emails for Tom later in the show, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Reach the show on Twitter anytime, at the Rog 590 or at Tom Tebbit, and delighted to be with you. We've got a couple more shows this month in July and some more in August leading into the Rogers Cup, and we'll talk more about the Rogers Cup a little bit later. But let's talk a little bit about Yvonne and what you learned from that interview, Tom.
Well, Yvonne Ljubicic has always been one of the thinking men of men's tennis. He ranked as high as number 3 in the world. He had a bunch of finals with Roger Federer. Actually, when I interviewed him, I was talking to him, and he used to practice a lot of the time with Roger. They're great pals, and they text each other quite a bit. And obviously, he's Milos Raonic's coach now for a little over a year. He's a big guy, 6'4", so differences with Milos' games a bit, but in most ways, probably a similarity. So I think he's had a very good effect on Milos. He's a Croat. Milos is more Montenegro Serbian ancestry, but they both speak the same language.
So it's a background.
So sometimes they speak Serb, sometimes they speak English. And so it's an interesting mix, and so far so good.
And here's a conversation with Tom Tebbit.
Ivan Ljubicic, welcome to Aces.
Hello. Hi.
Were you in as good shape as Milos Raonic is in right now?
Well, it's no, I don't think so. I think he's in great shape in all aspects, technically, physically, mentally. It's he's in a great position to be at, and obviously very motivated as well as the whole team is, you know, to go further. Things are happening positively, and he's absolutely zero issues, in fantastic shape.
What have you observed about the way he gets into shape and with his fitness trainer and his physio and all that? How much different is that than it was with you, and what impresses you about that?
Well, I think the sport in general, it's a lot more professional than what it was 5-10 years ago. I mean, 10 definitely, even 5 years ago. It's changing in the direction where it's just amazing to see how fit these guys are, these athletes, and how much attention they put in every aspect, even what they eat, how much they sleep, you know, sometimes even what they watch, you know. So Milos is a big man, you know. He has to be obviously very careful about his body, and we have a fantastic team around him that it's really keeping it together and making sure that he feels better and better on the physical aspects, and obviously we tennis coaches are making sure that he improves his tennis every day. So the team, it's large, and you know, today if you want to compete with the best, that's what it has to be.
Does it help you being a big guy and you haven't been on the tour for so long to understand what some of the problems, some of the challenges are for him?
Yes, I mean, I understand. Of course, you know, I've been through it not long time ago. But not only that, you know, spending time 24 hours a day with him, even if I had a different game, you know, you just understand. And that's really important part of coaching a player, really to understand his point of view, the way he sees things, and then work with, together with that instead of imposing your experiences and your views, you know, because sometimes can be confusing. And this was my work, especially at the beginning when we started working 13 months ago. And now we absolutely understand each other a lot more, and it's a combination of the way I think, with the way I see things, and the way I think he should play, and the way he feels. So me as a coach, I have to combine those things and make sure that he feels comfortable with decisions that he makes on court, tactically or even technically in the practice court.
It's more than a year now that you've been coaching him. How would you say, what have you learned in a year? How are you a better coach, or how have you evolved as a coach from this year working with one player like that?
It was easy in a way. One way is easy because he's really motivated, determined to be better every day. And in that sense, it's really, really easy to work with Miloš. I've never met anybody who wants to succeed like Miloš. Obviously, it's hard because physically it's hard to travel the world, you know, still. And obviously, family, it's paying the price, kind of family life. But it's a job that I chose. It's something that I love to do. So I've learned myself a lot about, especially about the way he sees tennis, and he sees the way he thinks that he should play. And this is the most difficult part, you know, because obviously being a player and seeing tennis in one way for 15, 20 years, and then you start understanding that, you know, your player doesn't really see it the same exact way, and find the right combination, right balance, imposing your views and then combining with his views is the most challenging thing. You know, you don't want to, again, you know, to create too much confusion there.
Miloš has evolved as a player both on clay and on grass. And actually, a year ago, I spoke to you, and you said you thought Miloš was going to be a better player on clay than on grass. Have you revised that opinion at all?
No. I absolutely think that's always going to be the case. I think his game, it's a very powerful game. He likes to swing. He likes to take the game in his own hands, as you could have seen, you know, last 12 months since we were working together. And on clay as a surface does allow you to really have a ball on the string, on the racket, and to decide what you want to do. As a slower surface, it also gives you time to arrive to the ball better and swing better. And obviously for him on the return games, it gives him more time to return easier. So all these aspects help his game. And his serve is still incredible weapon on any surface. So I'm really happy, you know, with the clay court season. We didn't win anything, but we made major steps forward. And also on grass, you know, it was an easy start. He's a type of player that needs time to adjust to surfaces. And unfortunately, grass season is short, so he doesn't really have too much time. But from next year, for example, it's going to be a week longer, which I think will help Miloš. But we are happy, of course, to go further in Wimbledon, and all these matches that he's playing and tennis that he's playing on grass, it's not only great for this year, but for the future of his career on grass.
Your former coach, Ricardo Piatti, is on the team this year, so you're the coach, he's the coach as well. How do the two of you work together with Miloš? What are the different responsibilities?
No, the responsibility is not so much, but we have same roles in a way also, because we are both coaching him, but different views, because I have a view as a player, and I kind of understand, maybe it's easier for me to understand precisely what's happening in the match and mentally situations of the match. And for Ricardo, it's more like big picture, organizing things, scheduling tournaments, working on technique and stuff like that. So, but for me, Ricardo is not a coach. He's my father, coach, mentor, everything. And it's really easy to work together because we see the tennis absolutely in the same exact way. And that's also very important, that Miloš doesn't get two different voices, but one message in maybe two different ways to say it. But he does get it's pretty clear to him what we want from him.
You mentioned about clay maybe being a better surface for him. How about clay versus hard courts? Which, how would those two line up in terms of which is best for him or most favorable for his game?
Hard court will always be his absolute best surface. There is no question about that. And we're really looking forward to see how the summer will finish. But obviously, we want to improve his game in general. And we are expecting big things from hard court. We are not running away from that. It's definitely his best tennis will come on hard courts.
This year, the semifinal in Rome with Novak, I mean, Milos played fantastic, and then he played very well at the French. The match with Simon was terrific. You know, even played well against Djokovic in the loss. Seems to me he's gone up a little notch, a level or something like that. What exactly has happened?
Well, he's improving. I mean, he's gaining experience. This is something that you cannot learn overnight. One thing that for him it's surely frustrating is that, you know, his career so far was made of big steps forward, but big, you know, 100, whatever, 50 to 30, 30 to 15, and now those steps are smaller and smaller. I mean, they are still big in sense of the way he's improving, but ranking-wise, you see it less, and sometimes it can be frustrating, and that's only thing, maybe negative thing about him, that he feels he wants to be there tomorrow, you know, instead of taking time and really understanding that it takes time. Some things you can't, it just, they don't just happen overnight, and experience is one of them. And he has to, you know, in order to beat Djokovic on the big stage, which will happen absolutely very soon, but you just have to, you know, leave these matches and learn from them and go back in and you know, learn from it and then try to win it next time. These guys are extremely good. You know, Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, and Murray are incredibly solid. In order to beat them, you know, you just need certain experience that you have to go through.
Grigor Dimitrov and Milos are often talked about in the same breath in terms of future champions and very, very good players. How would you compare them? And I know it's difficult as Milos' coach to make this judgment, but how would you see both of their futures in terms of how far they can go?
Well, they have similar careers, so until now, you know, maybe Milos is a little bit more successful, but maybe Dimitrov is more talented in a way, technically, you know, but technique is not really something that wins matches today. He's also developing very nicely, especially last year and a half, has improved quite a lot. So it's nice to see them, you know, together growing. And, you know, I wouldn't forget that they are 22 and 23 years old. You know, some of these champions today, like Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer, and Murray, and, you know, they were winning slams already at that age. So that's why it's also extremely hard for them to have to be patient, because these guys are still around, and it's very, very difficult for them to break through in that sense. I can't really, and it would be stupid even to say who is better. You know, they're just different players, and I think the players, the people that they like Dimitrov better, I think it's solely because he's so similar to Federer, and Federer is the player who was dominating the tour for the last 10 years, and it's just easier to see it. You know, that Dimitrov is the one, the next one. You know, I think Milos' game, it's a lot more similar to Pete Sampras' game. It's a huge serve and huge forehand, obviously going to the net less, a lot less, because of general sport in general. It just went this way. But I think if we didn't have this domination of Roger in the last 10 years, I think people would appreciate more Milos' game.
What do you enjoy most about working with Milos?
No,
what do you like most about him?
No, but it's just easy. I mean, you know, he's in a way, you don't think that me as a coach, sometimes I have to give him off time off and relax, and he doesn't want to, you know. So it's really, really easy to organize practices and to put, he puts incredible attention and focus on every single aspect of his game on and off the court. So in that sense, it's really, really easy.
And just a last question, when people see you in the player's box watching a match, what's actually going on in Ivan Ljubicic's head?
No, I'm nervous. I'm very, very nervous. You know, it's definitely easier to play, and when you have things in your own hands instead of watching, and it's going on. No, I'm really enjoying to see Milos developing into extremely good player and champion, and it's really pleasing and satisfying to see the results of the work that we are putting in every day.
Ivan Ljubicic, thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Every coach has got to be different, Tom, in terms of what it's like to sit and watch, because in any sport, the coach, the manager, it doesn't matter, can't do it for the athletes. But I got to believe in tennis in particular, it has got to be nerve-wracking. There's one guy out there, and there's nothing you can do to help him.
I think the word is squirm,
Roger. Creepy.
Nothing you can do, and you're sort of trying to help. Occasionally, you could wink an eye or touch your nose and say, hit it to the forehand or something like that. But
yeah.
It's a tricky situation. But, you know, you live and die in every single shot, and you obviously know from there what you should have done when things aren't done correctly, and obviously you're ecstatic when things go right.
He's a pretty good player, too. And, you know, I guess it's the old adage in the sport. How many of the tennis coaches that are out there now are really good players? Because it's the adage in a lot of sports that a really great hockey player can't possibly be a good coach because they get too frustrated. Is the same thing true in tennis, or does it really matter now that you think about people who have been great tennis coaches?
Well, you look at the Big Four, and Rafa's the only one. He's been with Uncle Tony, and Uncle Tony was just didn't really even play the Pro Tour, I don't think, very seriously. So, but you look at Lendl's effect with Murray, and Djokovic is now with Becker.
Yeah.
Although he was with a coach, Marion Vida, who was just a sort of moderate player.
And, but still a player, though.
Yeah, and Federer, you know, Federer has a variety of coaches. Edberg's with him now. But I think if you're a really good player, what it does is the player you're coaching has that little bit extra respect for you because you've been there.
Yeah.
And if it's been said a million times, if you or I said something to Federer, and then he had Stefan Edberg say the same thing, he'd take it in a different way.
As he should. And there is the level of respect. Great interview for sure. That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. Another great interview coming up later in Aces. Jack Sock. He might be an American, but we love him in Canada now, and we all know why. Tom loves your questions. Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. Drop a question for Tom. Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. We'll read the mailbag a little bit later. We've got the Rogers Cup tickets you could win with Tom's trivia. Have you given the trivia a lot of thought this week? Are you ready for it?
Roger.
Apparently not. Well, get busy. We got about a half an hour to do that and a great chance to win Rogers Cup tickets. So stick around. All that's coming up right here on Aces with Tom Tebbit and Roger Lajoie right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
In a white room with black curtains, near the station.
It's Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit with me as always, and glad you are with us. We're going to get into Tom's mailbag in a few moments, and we'll also have a chance for you to win Rogers Cup tickets, so stick around for that. And Aces, of course, is not possible without the terrific support of our sponsors, and we thank National Bank, our sponsor as well, of this second segment. More about them a little bit later. But now, Tom, a little bit more about Jack Sock. He's an honorary Canadian, to say the least, isn't he?
Yes, he is. I mean, it was really amazing how he gelled with Vasek, how the two of them got along. And when I did talk to him while I was at Wimbledon, is that you could see that, well, Vasek's an easy guy to get along with, but there is really a friendship there and an understanding and just a fun aspect of how they get along. And I think that without that, they wouldn't have done as well.
Well, let's find out what Jack Sock thinks about that and more his conversation now with Tom.
Jack Sock, welcome to our show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
That last shot at Wimbledon, that forehand service return inside in, it was a really sensational shot. I mean, if people were going nuts, it really took a lot of people's breath away. What was your thought process on that shot? How did it come about?
I mean, Vasek and I had a few match points before that, and they'd come up with some pretty massive serves, some of the biggest of the match, and I think they ate us four times on our four previous match points. And so the last one, obviously, I was praying for Mike to miss the first serve first, and then once he, in the earlier in that game, he had thrown in kind of a softer second serve, and I was able to run around. So told myself again, maybe try it again, and if he wants to go up the tee to my forehand on match point on a second serve, then that'll be too good. But he ended up going kick wide, and I was able to run around and kind of just hit a very clean forehand and right past Bob. So it's pretty special.
Must have felt awfully good when you did it.
Yeah, right when I hit it, I saw Bob move a little bit, and so right when I hit it, I knew it was a winner. So I had nothing else to do but fall down on the ground.
You grew up in Nebraska. I'm just wondering, how hard is it to grow up as a young tennis player in Nebraska and then hope to make it as a pro in the tour?
I mean, odds are probably against you a little bit. Obviously, we all know Andy Roddick is from Nebraska as well, and grew up there for a little while. But I think he moved to Florida pretty young, and I moved to Kansas City. And when I was in fifth grade, my mom, my brother, and I moved there for a tennis academy. So that was a sacrifice for our family, and obviously very thankful for them for doing that. And I was able to kind of take off with my tennis career from there and really take it seriously and move up in the levels.
You were 80-0. You didn't lose a single match in your high school tennis career. Did you ever come close to losing in any of those matches?
Actually, I played my brother my sophomore year and his senior year. He's 2 years older. I played him in one of our kind of like league tournament matches in the semis or finals. And it went in that format. We played 2 out of 3 sets, and then for the third set was a 10-point tiebreak, and we actually went to a 10-point tiebreak, and I won 10-8. So yeah, that was the closest one.
Right. You mentioned Andy Roddick a little bit earlier, him growing up in Nebraska. Do you have any kind of a connection with him because of that?
I mean, we're friends, and I played him in 2011. Was one of the cooler moments of my career, playing him out on Arthur Ashe at the U.S. Open second round on Friday night. So, but yeah, I mean, we've talked some, and we're friends, and he's given me a little advice over the years. But obviously, now that he's retired, he's not obviously too involved with the current tennis going on, but obviously he'll always be a guy I looked up to and a guy I watched as a young kid. So,
what was that like playing him on Arthur Ashe Stadium when you're that young? Was it pretty intimidating, or was it just a lot of fun?
I mean, a little bit of both. I mean, I usually feel like I do all right in kind of big matches in front of a lot of people, so I really went out there and just enjoyed it, and I lost in straight sets, one break a set, but I really enjoyed the time out there, and hopefully it's not the last time out there.
This is a little bit of an oddball question, but what's the most common joke made about your last name?
I think there's a lot. Most common, I don't know, probably just the usual smelly sock or whatever. I don't know. I've heard so many over the years that I can't even remember.
This was only your second Wimbledon. How much more comfortable are you on the grass? Did anything happen this year where it sort of clicked and it was a little bit more easy for you to play on the surface?
I had a little more preparation this year. Last year, I went straight from the clay to Wimbledon and only had a few days of practice. And then this year, I chose to go home after the French Open and then come back. Kind of did the same schedule as my friend Isner, and we went over and played the Boodles at Stoke Park before, and I was able to get 4 matches in against some top players, and I think that really helped practicing every day there with some top guys and getting a bunch of sets in, and obviously relaxing as well, playing some exhibition matches, but obviously serious and great preparation at the same time. So I think that actually really helped me this year, and probably keep that schedule for the years to come.
So you went back to Tampa. Were you able to play on grass there at all before you went back over to England?
Yeah, we have we train John and I train at the Saddlebrook Resort there, and the guy who runs it, Kevin O'Connor, has really helped us out, and they have a few grass courts there, and they really did them up well and maintained them well. So then when we got back from Paris, that we were able to practice on them.
Oh, that's great. You won the U.S. Open Juniors in 2010. Obviously, that's a great thing to do, and it's nice, but are there any negatives to winning the U.S. Open Juniors? Is it sometimes better to sort of fly below the radar? For example, Milos didn't do very much as a junior.
I don't think there's anything bad about it. I think people kind of consider me under the radar as well for that, because since I stayed in high school and played high school tennis, I didn't travel and play all the ITFs like a lot of the kids my age were doing, and so I kind of stayed in school, and I was going to the normal high school classes throughout the day and just practicing after school got out. So I would say I was kind of the oddball in my group of guys my age, and then for me to go and had a wild card that year into the tournament and was able to, fortunate enough to win it, was kind of out of nowhere. So I guess I was under the radar a little bit as well.
Yeah, you got that wild card because you won the U.S. Nationals under 18s, right?
Right.
Milos Raonic and you have played 4 times. You beat him in Memphis. He beat you most recently at Wimbledon. What's the scouting report on playing Milos Raonic?
Hope he misses a lot of first serves. I don't know. I mean, he obviously he's a very, very established player now and in the top 10, and deservingly so. He's improved a tremendous amount over the years, and it's been pretty cool to watch, and obviously he's a guy that you don't really want to see in a draw. He's a very dangerous and obviously has one of the best serves in the game, and we have pretty good battles every time we play each other, and when I play him, I just hope to go out and play my best tennis, because that's what it'll take to beat him.
You've never played Vasek Pospisil, but you've seen him enough. What would be the scouting report if you played against Vasek?
A little bit of the same. He's another big server and moves well and solid from the ground. So once again, I'd have to take my best chance to beat a good player like that. And hopefully we'll have a good battle here soon.
What did you enjoy most about actually being out there on the court with Vasek? What was the good thing about how you got along actually on the court?
I think it was kind of just that we got along really well. Our personalities, we became pretty good friends, obviously, and really had fun out there. I think we didn't keep it; it wasn't so serious all the time. We were just kind of talking about whatever and really just enjoying ourselves and having a lot of fun. And I think that's kind of why we did well. It was pretty relaxed for the most part. And when it got close and when it needed to be serious and it got to some clutch moments, we both kind of came up with our best tennis. So that was fortunate for us.
You're 21 and Milos Raonic and Grigor Dimitrov are 23, but they're young guys. I just wondered, was it sort of inspiring for you or encouraging for you to see both of them make the semifinals at Wimbledon?
Of course. Every time, I've played Milos a few times, like you said, and to get a victory against a player like that, and I haven't played Grigor yet, but to see these guys do well and make the semis of Wimbledon, obviously, which is the kind of ultimate goal for me, is to be playing on the second week and second weekends of the slams and singles, and to see these guys do that and keep moving up the rankings and establish themselves in the top 10. It's only motivation.
Jack, I think a lot of the young guys like you get media training. I'm just wondering, our listeners are probably curious about what kind of things are you taught and what are you encouraged to do in terms of dealing with the media?
I haven't had a ton, actually. I'm very honest most of the time, and I'd say I'm pretty outgoing and I don't know. I mean, really just speak what's on your mind and enjoy it I don't know. I haven't had a whole lot, actually.
And along those lines as well, what's the most boring question that you usually ask when you're involved in a media conference?
The state of American tennis. I get that one a lot, and it gets old after a while.
Yeah. Do you have an answer for that one?
I'll give the same answer I give every time. I think there's a group of us young guys that are really working hard it's a process, and we're all doing our best to kind of get it back to where it was.
Who's the current player who's been the most helpful with you?
Probably John, actually. Probably Isner. I've only lived in Tampa for a few months, but we've really spent a lot of time together and we've really become pretty close friends. And he's been helpful and motivating at times and kind of helped me get on a path that's I feel like my results have been doing a lot better and for him and I both, it's been great to kind of be around each other and rub off on each other, and obviously all thanks to him for kind of taking me under his wing a little bit.
Jack, you know what an over under is in football?
Yeah.
So we're going to make two the over under here, and this is a bit of a tricky question, but you say you're honest, so you have to answer it honestly. Over under of two, the number of glasses of champagne you had before you came to the media conference at Wimbledon. Don't forget that I was there.
Over, under, under, actually. Under of champagne.
Really? I'm very disappointed.
I know. I don't speak for Vasek, but for me it was under two of champagne.
Anyway, Jack, thank you very much for being on the show tonight.
No worries. Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
There's the key. Under two of champagne leaves the door open for additional booze in addition to champagne. And how big were the glasses?
Well, the other thing is, I think as a true Canadian, I think Vasek was over, and Jack more or less implied
you
over
know what?
Two glasses.
Yeah, we can drink them under the table, no problem. Interesting guy. Great job, Tom. That's Jack Sock in conversation with Tom Tebbett. I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces. Aces is brought to you in part by National Bank. At National Bank, we know you can't win without strong service. That's why we're proud to sponsor the 2013 Rogers Cup. Visit nbctennis.ca. That's nbctennis.ca. All right, time now for Tom's mailbag. And as usual, Tom, we got some great questions. And the mailbag is brought to you by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada. I hope you're ready tonight. Because if you're not, we're out of luck, aren't we? Ready?
I'll give it a shot.
Okay, good man. Let's start with, let's go to the top because we've got so many here and we'll try to get to them all, folks, but we'll probably miss a couple in here. So let's just get to the top. Mike says, What more would Rafael Nadal have to accomplish for you to consider him the greatest male tennis player ever? Does he need to win more Grand Slams than Federer? That's a conversation that people are going to be talking about the next couple of years.
Well, they've been talking about it for years. I think that's kind of it. Raj is at 18 now, and Rafa's at 15, so he's got three to go. And
that's the measuring stick.
Yeah.
Janet emails in, of the young players, Milos, Dimitrov, Pospisil, Tomic, which one do you think has the best chance to win a slam and why?
Well, it's hard to say. Dimitrov and Milos are obviously at the head of the class now. They're both in the top 10. And I think Dimitrov, if you look at his game compared to Roger a lot, definitely maybe more varied talent. Milos, I think, is more focused. You know, I saw pictures today. Dimitrov is on the beach in Mexico with Maria Sharapova.
Yeah, it's hard to stay focused on anything else besides Maria Sharapova.
I have a feeling that generally Milos is just more nose to the grindstone sort of thing. So that, and I thought Kyrgios, Nick Kyrgios beating Nadal at Wimbledon, we hadn't seen much of him, and he's still a teenager. Very explosive game, big guy, 6'4". I think he's got a very bright future as well. There's Dominic Thiem, Bernard Tomic still around, and Vasek is around too. So there's a bunch of young guys. But Kyrgios, it was just one match, but it was kind of scary how well he played.
You didn't think Genie was going to be any good. What are you talking about? Tyson emails in. Guys, would Andre Agassi had better success against Pete Sampras than he did if they'd played in this era, given how the surfaces have changed from the 90s to now? Surfaces certainly have changed. Would it have made a difference?
Yeah, I think a little bit of a difference. The surface is probably a little bit faster when Sampras was playing. But, good players adjust. And I don't think a lot of those matches, I think Pete was just a better player than Andre. He won all four times they played at the U.S. Open. I thought that was probably the number one proving ground for them, their home tournament
sure.
on the most popular surface in the States, and Pete won all four times.
Brian's got a great question. He wants you to take off your media hat and put your fan hat on and rank the four majors in terms of overall fan experience in terms of attending the event. Very few people get the opportunity to go to all four. So what would be the best one in your mind in order?
Well, I wrote something down quickly. Number one, Wimbledon, just because it's one of the greatest, yeah. Number two, almost equal, the Australian Open, the U.S. Open. Australian Open, because it's fun to be there in January. It's a great trip. Once you get there, it's a long trip. U.S. Open is pretty accessible, good access to the outside courts, except for Arthur Ashe Stadium, which is a monstrosity. The French Open, how can you rank it last? I mean, you have all that food, and the women are very stylish, and the red clay is fantastic, but it's a little bit crowded these days. So they're all fantastic, and if you have a chance, I mean, it's just a treat to go to all four.
Anyone is an opportunity for sure. Verin says, it's fairly common knowledge now that the conditions at Wimbledon are slower than they used to be in Pete Sampras's day and previous to that. But is it true the conditions at Roland Garros have sped up as well?
Yeah, I think they've done something with the ball as well, try to speed it up. And I mean, you look at Milos doing so well there this year. A guy like that with a big serve, even though he's got big ground strokes in the past, probably wouldn't have had as much chance. So definitely it speeded up at Paris. That's a good thing. You don't want to see guys rallying from the baseline forever and ever.
Time for two quick ones. Mac in Montreal, always listen, says, any theories on why Rafael Nadal has been so vulnerable at Wimbledon, particularly during the early rounds? A few people at McGill University say they've been doing the math on this. Grass in the surface is with the least time to prepare. The grass is a surface where you have the tightest margin of victory, and the grass plays differently early in the tournament. But he'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, I think 2 years ago when he lost to Rosol, he had a knee problem. And then last year when he lost to Darcis from Belgium, same thing. This year, I think that Kyrgios is just out of his mind. He's right. The surface is different the first week. And actually, I think I mentioned it last week that Rafa said that when the guys come out just hitting for the fences against you on that grass when it's still pretty slick, it's very difficult.
And finally, quickly, Lois says, Petra Kvitova, contender at Wimbledon for years to come. Has she kind of turned it around now? Is she going to be a factor for a long time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not sure she'll win a slam on any other surface. She definitely has the ability to do it. But she has asthma, which can cause some problems on hot days in terms of her endurance and stuff like that. Usually the weather's fine at Wimbledon. She gets a heck of a reward for her big strokes on the grass. And she's just a very, very dominant player on the surface. Definitely could win it two or three more times.
Thanks for your questions. Sorry the ones we couldn't get to. Keep that email handy, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Congratulations to Ken Cluley. Ken, you have won the Rogers Cup tickets for next Monday, and you'll be sitting with somebody else because Tom's got another question now. When I prompt you, Tom's going to give you the question, answer it, email us. We'll have a draw next week. And Ken, you qualify to win that Wilson racket as well later in the season. Our next Aces is Thursday, July the 24th. Tonight's question, sir.
I got to apologize. I got it wrong in February. 17 Grand Slams. I said 18. Raf is 14. So question tonight is, when an answer was given earlier in the show, the last Canadian winner of the Canadian Open Tournament, Robert Bob Bedard, what year?
What year did Bedard win the Canadian Open? And let's hope in a couple of weeks the answer is Milos Raonic. But right now it's Bedard, and the year is what year? You heard it earlier on Aces. Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. Roger at Sportsnet590.ca will draw next week another winner on Thursday, July the 24th. Tom, always a pleasure, sir.
Well, we'll see you, Roger.
Well said. Tom Tebbit, Roger Lajoie, coming up another edition of Sportsnet tonight. Thanks to Derek Brandeo and Igor Henriquez for putting the show together. And thanks to all of you for your trivia questions. Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. Take your chance at winning the tickets. We'll talk to you on Thursday, July 24th. On Aces, Tom Tebbit and Roger Lajoie right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.